Let's bring John Molinaro, chief soccer reporter for Sportsnet, on and part of this discussion. You know, John, that was a final between two worthy finalists. I think it was the more superior team. I think France was, you know, just on talent and any level, a more superior team. But for some reason, I don't know, I found the final was kind of unsatisfying. And I don't think it had to do with VAR. I don't think it had to do with the penalty kick. I mean, I've seen more egregious decisions made with or without VAR in a match. But I don't know what it was. It seems to me to be, it's just an odd score. I have no idea. I have no idea what I expected more. I guess that was what I'm saying. I expected more from that final.
I'm with you there a little bit, Jeff. I think the 4-2 score flattered France a bit. That's not to suggest that they aren't deserving winners, but you know, at 4-1, you just thought, oh God, is Croatia really this bad? I mean, is France really dominating this much? And I don't think that was the case. So I think the score is a little bit misleading. It was a bit of a strange game with, you know, the penalty decision with the VAR, with France's opening goal, with Griezmann winning that foul, which I didn't necessarily think was a foul, with Croatia's second goal off the howler by Hugo Lloris. It was a bit of a strange game. I'm not sure how any other way to put it. Highest scoring game since 66. Got six goals, so that's great. But, I don't know. Something about it. You just kind of felt, oh, God. I thought it would have been... I can't really put my finger on it.
Yeah. I think we're on the same page here. And I found it odd because I found the tournament itself... I think really provided, it provides so much food for thought. I mean, I have to admit, and I don't generally like changing my opinion based on one tournament, but I'm wondering now if maybe increasing the size, the number of countries in the tournament, maybe it's not going to be the disaster I thought it was going to be. And you know, I don't know why there were some horrible teams in this tournament. Panama was an awful team. Saudi Arabia wasn't a good team, but credit them, at least, you know, they, in the first match against Russia, I was going to say they fell on their sword. They went out, you know, they were going to try to play soccer, and they tried to play soccer in a costume. But this tournament's kind of changed my mind about that. I'm a little more open now to the idea of bringing more teams in, and I don't know if I should be.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I kind of go back and forth about the expansion. On the one hand, I think it's great. I mean, the more exclusive the tournament can be, then I think that that's only a good thing. And you saw, I mean, Panama getting whitewashed in that 6-1 game against England. When they scored that goal, the one goal they scored, just to see the celebrations in the stands by the Panamanian fans was, I thought that was one of the best moments of the tournament. I really do. And you can't help but feel... you know, something like that is really going to sort of, not that the game necessarily needs to grow in Panama, but it will sort of inspire a whole new generation of players to take up the game, and it will just lead to player development. I guess my major concern is just the way, you know, the 48 teams, like how it's going to be divided into groups of three. I think, you know, for that, it's really, I fear that it's just going to lead to some dour defensive soccer in the group stage, because you know, you're only playing two games, and I just have a sense that teams are going to be really, really conservative and play things tight, because they know one loss and they're really behind the eight ball. it could be going home. So I just worry about that, and how the small groups, the groups of three teams, how that's going to play out in terms of tactics and how teams approach the games.
I'll tell you what, if that happens, I guess we can be prepared for more set-piece goals.
Yeah, maybe.
Because that seems to be the... If teams bunker down, that sort of seems to be the inevitable outcome, doesn't it?
Yeah, it could be it. Yeah, we certainly saw it in this World Cup. I mean, God, there were so many set-piece goals. I mean, I think I saw that was like all but... I think the majority of England's goals was something like 80% were from dead ball situations. So, yeah, that could be one of the things that emerges from from this tournament, from a tactical perspective, is just teams putting a higher importance and focus on set piece opportunities.
In that match yesterday, who caught your eye in particular for France?
Well, certainly Paul Pogba. I mean, I think, he came into this tournament, I don't know, needing to prove himself, but certainly there was a lot of questions about his standing in the global game. And I think, a lot of people have believed that he's underwhelmed since his move from Juventus to Manchester United. Certainly the price tag, that sort of came along with it hasn't helped him. Mm-hmm. So I just think there was this sort of cloud of doubt over him. But I think he erased all those doubts. I thought he was absolutely marvelous the entire tournament, playing in a more sort of holding defensive role, too. I mean, him and N'Golo Kanté teamed up to brilliant effect, I thought, in, sort of holding down that central midfield and really made it difficult for opposing teams to break France down. And I thought he just went from strength to strength as the tournament went on. And, the goal he scored yesterday was obviously a highlight for him. So I was impressed with him. I was impressed with Mbappe. But, for a 19-year-old, he plays with incredible maturity. So I thought he was fantastic.
Is there any lessons, do you think, for Manchester United and Jose Mourinho in how Paul Pogba was used?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, there could be something there. I mean, I don't know how much Jose Mourinho is going to sort of look at this and say, hey, maybe they're onto something. But if he's smart, then possibly he will. They're two different teams, though, let's keep in mind. I mean, France, I would suggest, have a wealth of attacking options, top-class world attacking options compared to Manchester United. That's, again, not taking anything away from people from Lukaku, but it's a little bit different situation. So I think the France playing him in a more sort of defensive role, I just think it sort of made sense, whereas with Manchester United, I'm not sure that's the best role for him, just because they don't have the wealth of attacking options. I think it just makes a little bit more sense to give him a little bit more freedom to get forward and to sort of pursue his attacking instincts.
So what were your pleasant surprises and your disappointments of this particular tournament? For me, it was kind of the whole Messi, Ronaldo, that exit. And also just, I needed to be more impressed by South American teams. I thought I was really disappointed in a lot of the soccer I saw from them.
Yeah, you weren't impressed by Uruguay?
I liked Uruguay, yes. But
I don't know. I guess, like, disappointments, I mean, obviously he's expecting a lot more from Germany for them to cry the way they did. That was obviously a little bit disappointing. But I think the Messi and Ronaldo thing was not surprising, but still nonetheless disappointing because, they've been such great servants for their national teams. And for them to, I don't know, kind of whimper out. I mean, they really kind of petered out in this tournament. And it's probably their final World Cup, unless they come back in 4 years' time, but I really don't see that. I just get the sense that, they might stick around for the Copa America or Euro in 2 years, but I think another World Cup is asking a little bit too much for them. So to see them kind of go out on the game's greatest stage like that, it's sad. It's the end of an era. So, but in terms of what surprised me, I mean, it was great to see Uruguay. I mean, noted them before. I thought they were fantastic, and ran into obviously the French in the quarter in the knockout round. But I thought they were really brilliant and punched above their weight. And I was sort of touting Croatia for a long time, so it was great to see them do so well. I thought,
What made you do that? Because you, as I mentioned on Twitter a couple of times in our Sportsnet panel, you were the one person to call Croatia as a potential surprise team. You picked them to win the match yesterday. What was it about Croatia that caught your eye so early?
I think just, when you look at that midfield, when you look at guys like, it's an obvious answer, but look at that midfield. When you guys like Luka Modric, Ivan Rakitic, Ante Rebic, Perisic was dropping back. you know, you can't help but be impressed. And I think the work rate, too. I mean, this is, I would argue, this was the hardest working team. I mean, they were absolutely tireless in running themselves ragged during this entire tournament. I mean, Mario Mandzukic, I don't think gets nearly enough credit. I mean, ostensibly a forward, but the guy operates just all over the pitch and absolutely runs his socks off. So I think, you know, that work rate and just combined with their quality, and Subasic is the goalkeeper, although didn't have the great game yesterday. You just look at that entire roster, and I just thought there's great balance, there's great quality all over the pitch. So they were just someone who really kind of stuck out for me during the in the build-up to the tournament. And I really thought that Luka Modric would kind of come out and make it have a statement tournament, just because he's been one of the best midfielders in the world over the last 3 years. And, you know, thankfully I was proven correct.
You know, I think a lot of us thought going into this tournament that because it was held in Russia, and, you know, Russia's well-deserved reputation for, you know, hooliganism, you know, in some cases state-sponsored cheating in sports, all that stuff. I mean, a lot of us, well, I mean, I quite frankly thought it was, I thought it was going to be a mess, and I thought there'd be, you know, frankly, bodies in the street in a couple of instances. That didn't happen. Everybody, you know, and I know we have to be careful about sport washing, right? Because it does happen. It's something that I think it's something that happens in the media without intent, but it's almost like the more you talk about how great an event was, how lovely the people were, how warm and welcoming the country was, the more you do that, you always have to put the add the yeah, but to it. But were there any lessons, do you think, out of this World Cup for future World Cups? Because it did seem to go, I mean, it seemed to go really well in terms of transportation, accommodations, very little bitching from the media about things like that. Logistics seemed, for the most part, to be, you know, to work well. Any lessons, do you think?
I don't know that there are. I mean, I think, you know, this thing about, you know, I see this every time, whether it's an Olympics or a World Cup, and regardless of where it is, there always seems to be this concern about logistics and, oh man, are they going to get their stuff together? And this is going to be a nightmare. And it just, for me, it just never seems to pan out that way. It just always seems that, you know, our fears were unfounded. I think in this case, you know, Russia had especially good cause to make things right, because this was Putin's World Cup. I mean, he sort of, you know, went to great expense to bring this tournament to his country because he wanted to, you know, shine a light on Russia to, you know, improve the country's image within the Western world. So, you know, it was in the country's absolute best interest that this sort of, you know, came out without any flaws or with any hitches. So I think that was the driving force behind it. Now, there might have been some stuff behind the scenes that we didn't see, right? I mean,
sure.
It kind of came out, but I mean, you know, I haven't heard about any reports about sort of, you know, people being, you know, whether it's protesters or stuff like that. But you got to think that probably some of that stuff did happen behind the scenes. But again, I just think that it was, again, this was in Russia's best interest to put its best step forward just because of what's going on politically in the world, geopolitically in the world. So there was very little chance that I thought this was going to sort of blow up in their faces because they just had too much invested in it.
Now, I do want to shift focus a little bit. We just have you for a few more minutes. And this seems hard to do, to go from Toronto or to go from the World Cup to Toronto FC. But Toronto FC lost to Orlando this weekend, John. Not a very good team to lose to. You know, we've talked about, I think we've addressed the situation as Greg Vanney lost the team, all this stuff. We've talked about it. But are we at the point now where is it still logical to think the Toronto FC can make the playoffs, or at this point now, do we have to really, really kind of put those thoughts aside?
I think it's still somewhat logical, but it's, you know, hanging by thread here because it's, I think, 11 points behind Montreal. So they're, you know, 11 points out of the playoff spot with, you know, a little less than half the season to go. And the way that they're trending now, you know, I haven't seen anything this season that suggests that they can turn it around. I think the one sort of saving grace is that it looks like guys are starting to come back from injury. Josie Altidore was on the bench in Orlando. It looks like Drew Moore, Mike, and Chris Mavinga are slowly working their way back in, you know, into training. So, you know, as they get guys back, and it looks like some of the stars will be back soon. That could sort of bolster them, but it's a critical juncture. There's no, they can't afford to drop too many points right now. The way that they're playing, the way that Montreal is playing, and some of the teams ahead of them are playing, they're in a scrap right now. Then they absolutely have to fight and claw for every point they can get. So it's as I said, a critical juncture in the schedule right now for them.